Fast Am I, good afternoon. It's just gone 12:05, Wednesday 13th of April. Alex sitting in for Andy once again today on The Man in Line. Well, gas prices on the island have more than doubled since the global increase. Now Manx Gas is blaming Manx Utilities for preventing future buying. It was said to be a credit risk.
We obviously have recently tried to hedge and were perceived as a credit risk. And therefore the hedging was declined. If we hedge elsewhere, which we are going to be doing, there is collateral that we need to put forward of several million in order to do that.
That was Joe Cox. What do you think? We're awaiting a statement from Manx Utilities on the matter. So how are you doing? Are you freezing or are you hot under the collar about the whole issue? We'd love to hear from you today on The Man in Line. You know the number to call, 66 13 68. Or, of course, send us a text here direct on the studio. But people were quite active with their thoughts on Manx Radio Breakfast this morning. I will get to some of those comments in a while. First of all, though, Susan, on a completely different matter. Thank you, Susan. Said, hi, just a heads up for anyone travelling from Balaf on the TT course. The TT speed limits are creeping in. You know these ones that they just kind of pop up out of nowhere? So there are 40-mile-an-hour speed limit signs all the way to just past Ballacrane. So just be aware of that if you're dashing to the airport or for a hospital appointment. Thank you very much for that one, Sue. And let's have a look. Oh, one of the topics that was on The Man in Line yesterday, Jill rang up with the problem that there's nothing for kids to do on the Isle of Man. Something that if you haven't managed to get off island, you can't afford to get off island over the Easter period. If you're a parent, you'll be understanding exactly what... we are suffering with at the moment. But Benny says, regarding the people that say there's nothing for kids to do, where would they prefer to live? People can live wherever they like. If it's better across, then feel free to move across. Nobody is a prisoner over here, and I feel people should be grateful to live here. Do you agree with Benny, or is that just arrogance from Benny's point of view? Do you have kids, Benny? Or is this just a case of, well, I like it here, so everyone else should like it here? Okay, so we don't need to improve anything. Do you agree with Benny, or do you disagree with Benny? Love to hear from you. 66 13 68, and Howard is on the line. Good afternoon,
hi,
Howard.
Alex. Yesterday, we're talking about, as you say, about how the island is running down. Well, last night, we're talking to where my wife was, to our daughter. She lives in Stafford, Stoke-on-Trent, and... we've already booked it to come over in July and with the great-granddaughter, having been here for 3-4 years. And she said, I'm looking forward to taking Winnie on the horse trams. Well, the wife started to laugh. And then she said, and go out to Laxey Wheel. And various other aspects of what you would term as a holiday features are virtually shut. Now... it crossed my mind last night. They've been working on the promenade there for several years, and the various hiccups connected with the horse trams, and the chief minister, or the minister of DOI, he's quite flippant about it. Or it might happen, it might not. Well, this is not an attitude to have for a holiday season. Because there's another department just down the road from where he is wanting to encourage 500,000 people a year here. Well, they're going the right way about it, but shutting everything down. But now that they say that the horse trams, there is a possibility they might not run, where in that contract between Olden Builders and the Isle of Man government is there some means of redress? Because if you turn around and say, right, oh, you've made the complete horse's ear of it, pardon the pun, now we're going to look for recompense in, you know, in return for your inability to achieve your contract. And that might act as an incentive.
Well, the thing is, Howard, that there was a de-scoping agreement that was done that removed the remainder of the horse tram tracks that need reinstating to the sea terminal. It removed it from the project. And during our budget coverage, it was pointed out to politicians that, you know, the money was voted by Tynwald for the full length of the promenade. Correct. And it was said that the minister came to Tynwald with this, and the speaker... actually pointed out that the minister came to Tynwald and reported back, but didn't ask for permission from Tynwald for the funds to be redirected, effectively, in this de-scoping agreement. They just updated Tynwald.
They took £1 million out of it to move it to somewhere else within the project, but nobody knows what it went on or where it went. But that grassy area that is alongside the remaining garden walls on the promenade, that is where apparently the horse tram lines are going to be situated. Now, when and where and how that will be achieved, that's another story. But the problem, I think, lies at the bottom of Broadway, where the horses can come along and they're unable then to turn them to bring them or take them back to the Strathallan.
Well, this is the decision we're awaiting on at the moment from the Department of Infrastructure. It's all to do with the sets of points down there.
That's correct. And how long has that been going on? About 3 months, and they sent them away to be rebuilt, rectified, a set of points. And it's, you know, it's not what you call rocket science. These people are doing this all the time. So surely somewhere, olden builders have got to get their act together and get that not even tidy. It looks like a building site as it is, yet a month or so ago they were saying the promenade is finished, let's put the bunting up. But as I say, last night we said, oh, I'm sorry, but the horse trams might not be running. Well, she couldn't believe it, our daughter. And then they said, well, actually, wheel is covered with a scaffold and then covering. She total disbelief. And then various other aspects of the holiday sector that she wanted to go and take the little one to and go herself, because she lived in the UK for quite a while now, and it's always nice to come home to it. They've disappeared. Then she said, oh, we'll go through the gardens on the promenade. I said, you'll have a job. They're fenced off. And no activity down there. I'd like to hear an answer from the town council. Are they going to rebuild those walls or just leave those fences up? And will the children's playground, because that lady came on, there was a brilliant little playground there for the children, fenced off. They don't seem to be bothered. They just sit in their little chamber and think up new schemes how to spend money.
Well, I think when it came to the walls yesterday, Howard, I know that was raised yesterday when we were checking into it, that is more likely to be the DOI's responsibility rather than Douglas Council in terms of the damaged walls. Let me ask you a question, Howard, on this topic, because you and I could probably discuss it for a number of hours. In terms of the DOI and the promenade project, do you trust them to finish it off as it was originally voted for, as they were told to do by the democratically elected representatives?
The majority of democratically elected representatives. There's very few of those left, so you're not going to get a straight answer out of them. You'll get a political twist to it. And I don't think it'll be anywhere near what the people who elected these representatives expected. It's going to be a figment of somebody's imagination within the DOI and a computer to play with. And this is... I was on the promenade the other day, and the traffic, zebra crossing, as you would call it, by the Regent Hotel, lights flashing, nobody on it, but 20 yards down the road, there was a lady in a pram and another child walked straight across there. Now, who is saying that is a proper zebra crossing? Because there's no markings. Yet, as I say, 20 yards further back, it's a proper... So, it's an accident waiting to happen. It's a very... And why have they brought or bringing someone over to study the question, is the promenade suitable? Has it been designed properly? Is it workable? Why does the government find that necessary to bring somebody over to answer a question that the public have been putting to them for 3 years? But also I noticed there on your website on the news this morning, it's been kicked into the long grass and somebody's found it. They're talking again, they're bringing up the old chestnut of making the Marine Drive the most beautiful area for viewing, visual, making that pedestrianised. From, I should imagine, be from the toll gate side, this side. So where on earth is everybody that's going to walk along there, where are they going to park? Because outside your place on the opposite side, it's a maximum of 2 hours.
Well, I presume, Howard, of course, that the government and all the civil servants will tell us that we're going to cycle up there, because that's apparently what we do is the answer to everything. Don't we just all get on a bike?
Cycle up? I'm 78. I've got a bike in the back of my van, and I would take it up there. And with our grandson, I take it up there and cycle along the Marine Drive. Okay, it's a bit rough and ready, but that is just neglect. That is years of neglect. And that is getting worse and worse, and it's going to cost a pretty penny to rectify. And this is what they don't want to do. They don't want to spend money on the road. They just want to have people walking along there. And me, at 78 years of age, I would certainly not be walking along there. I don't mind cycling. But their idea is to shut everything down if it doesn't work. And then you've got the council sitting down there, spending £20,000 on one night's carnival from their reserves, and £27,000 putting festering lighting up, and I'm saying festering, lights up on the South Quay where nobody lives. And they've spent £100,000 putting a footpath down through the golf course, and the lights don't work. There's no lights on the top of the stems. So something somewhere, somebody's on, must be on Wacky Backy somewhere. But this is what it seems like. They dream up these schemes, but then suddenly they come to a full stop and there's nothing after that. They can't think any further than that.
OK. Well, thank you very much, Howard. Thanks for your comments, as always. Lovely to chat to you. A number of different issues that Howard has raised there in terms of the promenade, for a start. Now, promenade, I believe, of course, is a highways project, which means it falls under the purview of the Director of Highways, Geoffrey Robinson. And, you know, I know government comms don't actually allow us access to civil servants anymore because, you know, how dare we ask the people who are in charge of projects what they're up to? But it's an open invitation, live on radio. Mr. Robinson, come in and talk about the problems with the promenade. We'd love to hear the facts as to what difficulties have been faced with the promenade, because it's not been easy. If you look at the photographs of the history of Douglas Promenade, in the Victorian times, a lot of the promenade was just held up with, like, wooden fence posts in the ground, with wood backfilled with gravel and everything. That promenade has not exactly been masterfully engineered over time. So when they've dug down, they've had a lot to deal with. So what are the problems that have caused us to have such a headache of a project like Douglas Promenade? And is it the fact that highways are in charge of relaying a railway line, which isn't in their sort of sphere of expertise, cause part of the problem with the horse trams? I don't know. Open invitation for someone from the department to come on and talk about the facts. He also raised there the difficulties with Marine Drive. We're going to get to that a little later on in the Man in Line. Let's have a look at some of your comments that you are texting in at 166 177. Dave says, a nice parting gift from Ramsay Bakery. They've just whacked a massive price increase onto the bread. For example, the white sliced Molenberg has gone from 179 to 209. Is that a parting gift, or is that the fact that actually prices for everything are going up at the moment, Dave? Liz says, if I remember correctly, they ran a limited horse tram service from Strathallan to Little Switzerland a couple of years ago. Why can't they do that now, says Liz? I don't know, Liz. Looking at the end of where the horse tram currently finishes, in the middle of a load of Harris fencing, possibly not safe for tourists getting on and off. Of course, the other side of the argument is that good enough? Okay, if I went on holiday and I was looking at attractions like the quality we've got on the Isle of Man at the moment, wouldn't exactly tempt me back. Okay, the prom is ridiculous now, says 399. If only the public had let them put the horse trams on the walkway. Safe, green and no old traffic queues. The walkway is extremely wide, isn't it? I was driving down it last night when I noticed a load of people have parked on it. I'm not so sure they were meant to. But there's a huge amount of space on there. Why didn't we use the walkway? That's just a question. Tony says, our big salary takers need to be brought to task. Changing too many details with regards to the new promenade is the problem. The finished project is not what we were told we were getting. I remember Ray Harmer's line, wasn't it? A prom to be proud of was the line. So let's move away from the promenade now. If you have got any comments about the prom, of course, please do keep them coming. I'd love to hear from you. 166 177. But the one thing that is, let's be honest, causing a lot of conversation, and it certainly did this morning, was gas. Manx Gas couldn't buy more energy supplies in advance because it was perceived to be a credit risk. That was what the chief executive of the company's parent group told a Tynwald committee looking into Manx Gas's operations and what it charges its customers. Since Manx Utilities, which isn't government of course, it is a statutory board, but since Manx Utilities prevented the hedging, prices have more than doubled for Manx Gas customers. John Moss listened in to the committee.
The committee chair, Claire Christian, described the 90-minute session as intense, and it was roughly split into what has been and what the company wanted to do in the future, past and present. Joe Cox, chief Executive, and Aidan Baglow, Managing Director of Manx Gas, spoke of a policy now of openness since Ms Cox arrived in August last year, of the impact increased temperatures make on their operation, how the government refused a request for hedging, trying to take the sting out of bulk gas purchases by buying ahead, because Manx Gas was seen as a credit risk. First, though, the regulation framework voted in by Tynwald earlier this year after a voluntary agreement had been rejected by them. Jo Cox.
If the voluntary agreement had been approved in Tynwald and moved into that new voluntary agreement, we would have put prices up a lot earlier, so that £93 would have been paid, but a price increase would have come into effect because the price started increasing from August. So we would have been operating under the old voluntary proposed framework, and therefore we didn't implement a price increase until October, therefore protecting customers from £320 increase, which would have been implemented under the recommended voluntary framework.
In the first few minutes of the committee's questioning, historic hurdles got in the way of answers.
I can't answer that question because I, again, joined on the 2nd of August, wasn't party to those previous conversations, so I can't talk to the past before then.
After describing how increased temperatures had affected the operation, Ms Cox projected forward.
We haven't been a transparent company up until now. I think you'll probably notice that since I joined in August, I'm trying to be much more open and transparent with the information that we provide, making ourselves much more available to people that when they have questions, it will take some time for us to regain consumers' trust.
On a personal customer level, Ms Cox was questioned about disconnections.
It's always our last resort to disconnect a customer. We never want to disconnect a customer, to reassure you. The people that we disconnect are people that are disingenuous in their intent on paying. So to give you an example, one of the customers that reached out to me had a considerable thousands of pounds of debt, emailed me and said, I'm not paying you because I'm moving home in 2 months anyway. You know, for me, that's very different to someone that calls me and says, actually, I really can't pay. I'm really worried about heating my home. They're very different. And if you look at the people, they, like Aidan said, they're usually the same people. So they're often repeat offenders that will move home and they never pay their gas bill. So they're very different, and it's always our last resort to disconnect somebody.
Then came an intake of breath moment. The subject was hedging, spending large sums, buying forward in anticipation of possible rises, but also buying when prices are favourable. Jo Cox.
We obviously have recently tried to hedge and were perceived as a credit risk, and therefore the hedging was declined. We would like to continue to hedge. The reticence around it is that it's in effect free credit because they buy forward on our behalf. If we hedge elsewhere, which we are going to be doing, there is collateral that we need to put forward of several million in order to do that. So therefore, we're going to have to take a different option to hedge and buy forward via Macquarie or different banking options as opposed to from the MUA, which comes at a cost.
Can I just ask, could you just clarify, you said your hedging was declined. Declined by who?
So MUA declined to forward buy on our behalf in what was that, October time.
And did they give the reasoning?
Because we're perceived as a credit risk.
In previous years, the 9.9% profit, do you feel that that should have been able to withstand the shock that's happening now? Why was that not able to do what's happening now, but what yours is for those shocks? If you could explain that.
Yeah, so if you actually look back off over the last couple of years, it hasn't just been the volatility in the commodity prices. We actually have seen revenue decline considerably just because of commercial properties shutting during COVID. So as we all know, we've had a couple of years where a lot of commercial properties have felt the hit of not being able to open during COVID. We had to furlough a lot of staff. You've also seen, weirdly, that temperature has dropped. So recently I mentioned in the press that not only have we seen the fact that volume has gone down in the commercial sector, it's also gone down in the domestic sector because it is warmer. I know it doesn't feel that way, but actually it is warmer. So the volume of gas that we have normally been selling has also halved.
Ms Cox, do you not think that actually there's a coincidence with the fact that prices have gone up and actually people are just switching off their gas. I know you're saying it's temperature.
Yes, but not actually, to the volume that we've expected. So it's consistent across all three islands, actually. So it's not just that we're only looking at the Isle of Man. If you look at volume consumption of gas across all three islands, we have seen it dramatically change. And that won't just be because people are turning their gas off. It will be temperature related.
That's Joe Cox talking to the Tymwell Committee looking into Manx Gas's operations. Manx Radio has contacted Manx Utilities for a response. We are waiting for that response. The chair of Manx Utilities, Rob Cunister, MHK, did release a public comment on the Manx Radio Facebook page in response to this story, saying, let's wait for the MUA's response in respect to the comments made. So we are awaiting for that response. As soon as we have it, we will, of course, bring it to you here on Manx Radio. So are you surprised Manx Gas wasn't allowed to hedge or buy more gas in advance? You know, should Manx Utilities have done more to help keep prices down, or does it have to protect taxpayers' money? Okay, we would be interested in hearing your views on any of this. And also, when it comes to the comments there by Joe Cox, that apparently we're not turning off our gas supplies because the costs are rising, it's because the temperatures are rising. And that's the view of the chief executive of the Islands Energy Group, which owns Manx Gas, Joe Cox, as she was giving evidence yesterday. Is it the temperature rising that's making you not turn your gas on? Or is it the huge price increase? Okay, 58% increase when it comes to fuel. Let us know here on the Man in Line. 6613 at 68. If you want to ring up and have a chat, or text, of course, 166 177.
This is the Isle of Man talking, the Man in Line.
The Nation Station, Manx Radio.
The Man in Line on Manx Radio, Alex Sinverandi. Today it's a Wednesday, 12:30, and we're talking gas. And David Quirk is on. David, good afternoon. How are you, sir? Oh, I've lost him. Technology-wise, is not failing me. Oh, there
Edging
we go.
And I'm not an expert on it, but don't forget we do hedge too regarding electricity. Mm. And as somebody, I believe, that's a technical person in the or the Manx Utility service there, that actually trades on electricity as well. Because don't forget we've got the interconnector, and sometimes it's cheaper to buy electricity from the UK if it's nuclear, or when we have spinning reserve, we shove it back. But what I was going to put the scenario to you, now this has come about where Manx Gas, I'm not speaking on behalf of anybody else, just my only little thoughts here, is that if Manx Gas were prevented from hedging for their future by Manx Utilities, wouldn't you say that's an anti-competitive practice? Because you're asking another utility, which is providing electricity, which is preventing you from doing something which could have been the benefit of the other consumer on gas.
Now, in terms of the gas coming to the island, though, who is it who actually pays for and manages the gas that comes from our pipeline, that comes ashore off Kirkmichael there?
Far as I know, it's the Irish gas that comes in. We've got an interconnector there, and then Manx Utilities does the bit then that comes to the power station, because obviously it's the biggest consumer.
So effectively, Manx Utilities are the supplier. What you're saying is that Manx Utilities are the supplier to Manx Gas?
Yes.
Oh, right.
As far as I'm aware, that's a scenario, and they probably get it at a preferential rate. And the scenario we've got here, we've got government actually trying to negotiate something, but preventing a private company from actually... actually, they've given them a black mark on the list, because the Isle of Man used to have what we call a five-star rating. I don't know what it's down to now. A Treasury guy would probably tell you, David Ashford. I think we're probably down to about three-star plus one or something like that, which gives us credibility. So if you don't do, say, what government does, or for the likes of borrowing for local authorities and other government departments, if you don't do it through Treasury, you don't get the benefit rate, you know, the real rate that gives it copper bonnet that the account will be paid. And that's some of the number of it. And I hope the committee look at it a little bit more. But before I go, what I was going to say, Alec, too, don't forget Onca Park's open.
Excellent. What happened to the boats?
Before my time.
Oh.
I think there's one of them still rusting somewhere, but I don't think, my personal view, my grandson says to me, Noah, they're not fast enough, Grandad.
Well, David, before you go, because every time you come on and we're talking gas, I get a lot of comments from people who say, well...
Oh, you'll get the same guy all the time.
Well, and no, I'm
saying, I said...
Let me ask you a question on this one, because you, if we go back 6 years ago, you were the chairman of the Office of Fair Trading when you were an MHK that defended the voluntary regulatory agreement. Okay, I've got the story.
That's where you've got it wrong.
Go on.
Don't forget the Office of Fair Trading, which was independent with people on it as well. What they did is they did a report for the council ministers, which went to the council ministers. All those council ministers were given options, say, A, B or C. The council ministers then decided to go with A, which was the one we supported in Timbald, which all the council ministers... So I say to all the people, I mean, really must have been that clever if it, in them particular days I could convince all the council ministers just to vote on what I was saying. It wasn't. It was a report that was done. It was factual. And I would say now, tongue-in-cheek, if you would have had the 9% now, Manx Gas couldn't have got out of it.
Well, the question I was going to ask you is, because I've got the story up in front of me here from our website, Thursday the 30th of June 2016, David Quirk, the chairman of the Office of Fair Trading, has defended the regulatory agreement. I was going to ask you, looking back now, would you still defend it in that situation? Do you think it's been best for the consumer on the Isle of Man, the Manx Gas consumer? Do you feel any personal responsibility for how things have gone, good or bad?
Well, it started off originally, it was a test and see to see what their 9-point-something was percentage that they could earn as a company. Then over the years, what should have happened was it should have been if a regulator was coming forward, because don't forget, putting a regulator in there now costs Manx Gas Company and costs the Isle of Man government money, because you have to provide that expertise in there. And I don't know how much it's costing to actually perform the regulation service to do that. And then if that regulation service then should be provided to oil, electricity itself, government itself, should be doing that all the time to give it a cross balance. But who would have known what COVID was coming along? Who would have known that the ones who've got the energy supplies in the UK or the holdings there would start to increase the prices? That's the biggest thing. When you get a crystal
saying that, David, though, I will cut you off there. The Manx Gas controversy over pricing and people protesting outside Timbald well before COVID, you know, COVID continue to be used as an excuse.
No, I'm happy with that. What it was, there was a big change. That change could have been altered in any way, shape or form by a member of Timbald or an organisation coming together to try and change it or renegotiate it. Once you've got an agreement, which parties entered into freely, each party could have dropped out at any time.
So if you were in, shall we say, office now, if you were still in the Office of Fair Trading, you were still an MHK, what would you be doing with the current situation in terms of Manx Gas?
Well, well, it's open book to Manx Gas. And people don't realise that the Treasury, it's not the OFT now. Well, the OFT has a bit of a role, but it's this arbitrator, which is the Manx Telecom group that look at it now. And they have access to their accounts, they have access to their books, they have access to how much it costs them to run an operation. And that's what's happening or going to happen all the time. You look at the situation with, and I'll just revert to the bread situation, that's the same thing's happening. That won't be the only one that's coming over the horizon, which we've got to look at.
OK. Thank you, David. Thanks for your call. Always lovely to chat to you. David Quirk there. We're talking Manx Gas. Lots of your comments coming in. I'll get to them in a second. The other thing that this kind of put us onto when we were looking at some of your comments from breakfast this morning is that there is, you know, the cost of gas, the cost of energy, and generally the cost of food, all this stuff that's pushing inflation up into the cost of living crisis. And what is the government and the Treasury doing to support you? Because, of course, in the UK, before Partygate and wife's taxes and things like this, Rishi Sunak, the Chancellor of the Exchequer, was roundly criticised for not doing enough to support the population in terms of the cost of living crisis. And do you think that the Isle of Man government is doing enough? Because the other side of the coin is that with all these increases in energy costs, well, there is an increased income for the coffers of the Treasury from the fact that they get more money off the VAT that you're paying on all these different products. So we did a bit of a ring round. Both Manx Gas and Manx Utilities answered the phone and said, well, that's a good question when we asked them about VAT, and they had to go and look it up for us. Electricity, you're paying 5% on domestic electricity, 20% on commercial, if it's over 33 units per day. Gas is 5% VAT, 20% commercial. There's nothing on heating oil, but road fuel for your cars, diesel and petrol, 52.95 pence per litre, you're paying VAT. So when you hear a politician going on about the cost of living crisis and how awful it is, just bear in mind that the public finances are receiving additional income from the fact that you are paying more for things, which means you're paying more VAT, which means they get more into the Treasury's coffers. Do you think some of it should be coming back to support the more vulnerable in society? Do you think they should be doing more? Love to hear your comments on that. 66 13 68. We'll always go to the phones first here on The Man in Line. Let's have a look at some of your texts, shall we? G says, given the climate emergency and the rising price of gas, what is happening about the new power station? Has research and planning been started? It'll take years to build something. Yes, the Paul Rose power station, the gas-powered power station, is basically, its life ends around 2030, doesn't it? So we've got 8 years to come up with an alternative. Should we be looking at pumping the gas off Mackled Head as an interim measure and spending the income on green initiatives? Should we be looking at geothermal? Should we be looking at maybe small nuclear? Or should we just lay another cable to the UK and plug ourselves into their power line? OK, thank you, G. Any of your comments on that? I'd love to hear them. Dave says, explain why David Quirk refused to speak to the press for weeks on end afterwards and didn't have to vote for the agreement, and he bowed to Comin. Well, next time he's on, Dave, I'll ask him. What else have we got here? Sharon says, was Jo Cox actually at that meeting, or was she on Zoom from sunny Florida when she says we're shutting off our gas because the weather is warmer? Have you seen the temperatures? Yeah, it's a very good point, actually. Jan says, regarding the price of gas, hindsight is a wonderful thing. We didn't know the Ukraine war was coming. Good point, Jan. That, I suppose that's where hedging is. Hedging is hedging a bet, whether it's going to go up or whether it's going to go down. Who knows? But the other thing is, as I pointed out to David Quirk there, they were protesting about the cost of Manx gas before the Ukrainian war, before COVID came along as well. So those excuses can't be used. Let's have a look. Anne says, I turn my gas off purely down to cost. Okay. What else have we got here? Thank you to Jenny, who's making some interesting little points from Haitian about the horse trams. They don't like it up on Mr. Mannering. Morning, Alex. The problem with putting the horse trams on the walkway is they would be disrupted every time there's a bit of wind with overtopping. There is a problem with wind on overtopping on the Loch Prom, but I suppose it's also the same in front of the Empress Hotel, isn't it, on Central Prom? So I don't think it's a problem that would really be solved by keeping them on the roadway. Joe says, just give the gas problem to David Quirk. He'll sort it. What? Then he'll be a consultant. And you know how people love government consultants. More of your comments, please keep them coming. 166 177. Text them in, or of course you can send them in by WhatsApp as well. Thank you very much to Collier, who thinks that Howard should have his own program. He's quite cheap as well. You see, can put him on for an hour, and I can not have to bother standing in for Andy. I like that. What else have we got here? The MUA has effectively blacklisted IEG, which will have a knock-on effect, causing increased costs due to perceived risk, says GQ. Thank you for your message there, GQ. Be lovely to chat to you on the phone. It's only been David and Howard so far. 66 13 68 is the number to call if you've got feelings strongly about Manx Gas, or maybe about this story. Will the Marine Drive be closed to vehicles? Yes, what was formerly the Douglas South Electric Tramway that ran from just below Manx Radio here all the way around to Port Sodrick, through those arches, past its power station at Little Pigeon Stream there, across two magnificent viaducts, past the depot at Little Ness and down to the tourist hotspot that was Port Sodrick. Then, after the Second World War, we reopened it as a road. We chopped and dropped the viaducts. The remains of them are still sitting on the beach down there. And then we blasted into the cliff, and the roads in that area have subsequently slipped away in places. So it's closed to through traffic, but the majority of it's still open to traffic. It's been more than a year since a public consultation on proposals to pedestrianise the area closed. So John Moss asked the Infrastructure Minister, Tim Cruckle, for an update on the plans.
It has. Again, on the way in, I had a look up there.
It's scruffy, isn't it?
It is scruffy. It is scruffy, but it's a beautiful area, and there were
the road surface breaking up. The fencing is rusty.
There were three or four cars in the car park, and then past Pigeon Stream car park, there was another four vehicles up there. Two of them were from across. There's a lot of people use it, so it's a great area. It's well used. We were due to have a meeting next Friday between a policy and strategy meeting between ourselves and the Home Affairs. That's now going to happen at the end of the month, I think it is, and we'll follow that up from there. I don't want to see it closed off. I think it's a lovely area, and I think everybody should have access to it. And if we close it off, then there's talk of, you know, some people can't go up there. So we'll have that decision at the end of the month.
But do you agree some money being spent on it would make a lot of difference? Perhaps even uplighting on that archway?
That would be nice. But whether we need to go that far, I don't know. But certainly you mentioned the fencing in the road. Yeah, there's two patches of yellow fencing at the rails that have been put up there. That needs sorting out.
They've been there a long time.
They have. It looks awful. It really does look awful. And there's some potholes in the road that need sorting too.
Well, the surface is breaking up.
In places it is, and in places it's very good. So, yeah, we just need to be careful. But it needs looking after. We need to make a decision and decide either we look after it and keep it open or just close it. And I would hate to see it closed.
It's probably coming quite a way down your list because you have an awfully long list in your department.
It is a long list, but it's one of the things that need doing, and people do go up there. A lot of people do go up there, yeah, weekends, evenings and all sorts of things. So, yeah, and as I said, lunchtime, there was a lot of people up there still. So, yeah, it's a popular place.
The Infrastructure Minister, Tim Cruckle, talking about Marine Drive. Will it be closed to vehicles? Interesting listen to that. His words, I don't want to see it closed, but a decision will be made before the end of the month. Who's making the decision then in that department? Surely he's the minister that holds the power that we grant him at the ballot box. So who's making the decision as to what's happening with Marine Drive? Now, if you've been round there, yes, the minister's own words were, it's scruffy but beautiful. Okay, it's almost a tagline for Isle of Man tourism. Come to the Isle of Man, it's scruffy but beautiful. Because we were talking about this yesterday. We don't seem to maintain anything. There's things that are overgrown. There's paintwork that's bad. The aesthetics of the island just have not been cared for, despite how, you know, let's be honest, wealthy we are as a nation. So the question is the Marine Drive possibly going to be closed just to save on maintenance? Even if you walk further up, there's fencing that is broken and there's a sheer drop the other side. If you take your young kids up there, you'd hold on to them for dear life in case they fell over the edge. Okay, there's rusted railings, as John mentioned there, rusty barriers, cable tied together just around the corner here. And if it is closed to public use in terms of vehicles, how are disabled people going to be enjoying the view up there? Okay, currently, the people with mobility issues can get there, are in their vehicles. Is it discriminatory? Are we going to hear active travel thrown at us again, that we should all be using bikes up there and enjoying it that way, which means that people who aren't physically able can't use it? Okay. Or, and on the flip side, it is a beautiful area that, thanks to the road being shut when the section of the road fell away, it's peaceful, it's quiet, it's become somewhat of a nature reserve. Do we want motor vehicles around there? Do we want the R-platers, and I'm being very stereotypical here, razzing their cars up and down the clifftop of an evening, and Manx Radio reporting on another one being saved from over the edge the next day? What's your opinions on the Marine Drive? Get in touch. 66 13 68. I'd love to have a chat with you. Let's go through some more of your texts. You're very busy on the text this afternoon. No one picking up the phone. I'm obviously that intimidating. Okay, I should pass that on to my wife. Jan says, hi, Alex. With the £42 million that the government has put aside for green energy, why didn't they use it to put solar panels on all the buildings on the island with storage batteries? Then everyone wouldn't need gas or oil. We've recently, actually, with my Gradle railway head on, tried to get renewable energies and solar panels for some of our buildings down there. And when you eventually can find a contractor who will actually respond to any of your approaches, the cost is so prohibitive, it's unbelievable. So, but thank you very much for that suggestion. Very good one. Sue says, Cruckle wouldn't dare close Marine Drive. That's Tim Cruckle to you. We need to get our prisoners up there, tidying it up and painting it. Come on, pull your finger out, says Sue. Thank you, Sue, for that one. Can I suggest that whoever is responsible for flipping the switch does so for North Ramsey streetlights? They've been on all morning in Jerby Road. Thank you, Rick. Yes, that's not exactly saving energy. It's fast approaching 10 to 1. And, fantastic. Nigel is on the line wanting to talk about Isle of Man tourism. Nigel, good afternoon.
Alex, how the devil are you?
I'm not so bad, thank you very much. I'm better than Andy, which is why I'm here.
Well, you're holding the fort.
Yes, that's pretty much, yeah. I'm obviously, you know, last reserve at the bottom of the list.
Well, I've come up with a solution. I'm sorry we're having me lunch, and I think we could do this between us, you know.
Go on.
Alex and Nigel, painter and decorator.
That's a brilliant idea. Just go around putting a lick of paint on everything, tidying it all up.
Well, that's the point. Sea Terminal, my booking desk down there, and I go down there regularly. You've got all the staff upstairs in properties, and then a load of ministers and that go through the Sea Terminal. And you've obviously probably seen it. We've got the cruise ship's due. It's rusty. The window, all it needs is a lick of paint. And we've had 2 years. God's given us 2 years, unfortunately, with COVID, but we don't want to talk about that. But we've had the opportunity where people could have literally gone out and painted. I've just gone out to the Point of Ayre today to take some people out for a, got them off because they were going to go walking. Mm. And I know it's private land, but there's about 30 stock cars out there, which they're using for stock cars, all piled on top of each other. Now, I'm not being funny, but the cruise ship passengers go out there on a coach. I take people out there, and it's an absolute eyesore. Mm. And listening to Rob Collister the other day, and I mentioned this, I'm more than happy to take him and Angela Byrne in my minibus. You know what I've got? Take them round to these sites and literally say, stand back and be a visitor. Look at that building. Look at what your, this is your window. Look at your window and say, is that adequate for our guests to come and have a look round and visit? And is it clean and is it tidy? Because I keep saying it, 30 years I've been here over, and it's definitely on a decline. He wants 500,000, and I totally agree with a lot of things he says, but 500,000 visitors to the Isle of Man to come and see what we've got at the moment, I don't think stacks up right. I think we need to get it sorted before we even think of bringing the 500,000 people in.
Do you think, Nigel, sorry to interrupt you there, that we had a text earlier from Benny, who was basically saying that if you don't like it, and you don't like it over here, this was to do with attractions for children, there's not enough for children to do. If you don't like it, you can move somewhere else. Do you think that opinion that we all hear about, if you don't like it, there's a boat in the morning, almost permeates that, how dare you criticise something on the Isle of Man because we think it's wonderful?
Well, we do. I don't have any kids. But we have people that stay with us at the B&B that have kids. And this weekend, they're going to this wonderful Easter thing that they're doing up at South Barrall. There's a lot going on. I drive the little buses and people say, oh, my kids are taking, we're going here and we're going there. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, Morag Park is a prime example at the moment. I had to laugh yesterday. I was dropping people down there and the kids are on school holidays and they've just decided to paint the swings inside. So it's all blocked off. Well, they could have done it before the Easter holidays. But I know kids like getting paint on their fingers, but it's not the best thing to do. They could have done it a few weeks ago. But I do feel that there is adequate things for kids and people to do on the island. But the bigger point is when they get there, they're a disgrace and don't look right. When they get to the venue, they're not clean, they're not tidy. And that's our biggest problem. We all say it's a beautiful island and, you know, it's a great place to come and it's the golden egg in the Irish Sea and all that. But if we honestly look round what we've got, it needs tidying up. And really, tourism really need to start pulling their finger out now because it is on a decline. And the longer you leave it, the harder it is to pull it back.
Brilliant. Thank you very much for your comments there, Nigel. Much appreciated. Yep. We'll see if there's any further response, if others agree with you. Take care.
Yes, take care.
Bye. Nigel, great to hear from Nigel there. He thinks the island, in terms of its condition, is on a decline, and the longer you leave it, the harder it's going to get. Some of the comments that we've had regarding the Marine Drive story, actually, that came in on our Facebook page, you're very welcome to go and comment on there. Let's have a look. It's Martin, and our government has had the opportunity years ago to have the Marine Drive reinstated by the Army. And it's as an exercise. It would have cost the taxpayers nothing, but our visionless government turned it down. Is that what we're missing? A vision Okay. Do we need a vision? Where are we going? Instead of solving problems, let's look at an exciting vision. I don't know. Right. Let's have a chat with Andrew. Hello, Andrew.
Hello. I'll be on the island fortnight today. And I'm just thinking about the Marine Drive and how it needs to be tidied up. And cars could be allowed if they've got disabled badges. That's what my thought is.
Ah, so basically, a bit like effectively a disabled parking space, access for only those who need it.
Yeah, yeah. And subject to a severe speed restriction.
Mm.
Because when you're walking, you know, it's not very pleasant when people fly past you at some of the speeds that they do. And sometimes they get a bit close to people.
So your suggestion would effectively be not so much to close it off to traffic, but to restrict it.
Yeah.
OK. Well, thank you very much for your call, Andrew. That's a very good point, actually, that maybe it doesn't have to be one thing or the other. It could still be open to people who need it to be open for vehicles to enjoy, and then it could be closed for the rest of us who are able-bodied and able to enjoy it. There's a thought. I'd love to hear your comments. 166-177 is the text number.
You're listening to the Isle of Man's Manx Radio.
5 to 1, in fact, nearly time for the end of the man in line. We've received a statement from Manx Utilities regarding the Manx Gas comment at the Economic Policy Review Committee. And the statement reads, Manx Gas was considered a credit risk by Manx Utilities as it failed to supply further information when requested, which would enable Manx Utilities to understand the financial risk it was being exposed to following a significant increase in wholesale energy costs. As Manx Gas did not supply sufficient information, Manx Utilities was unable to forward purchase gas on the company's behalf. This decision was made by Manx Utilities senior officers and was considered regularly since by the Manx Utilities board most recently on the 25th of March 2022. So that's the statement from Manx Utilities regarding the comments by the Chief Executive Joe Cox at the Economic Policy Review Committee yesterday looking into Manx gas pricing. Well, thank you very much for all your comments this afternoon. We're pretty much out of time here on The Man in Line, but all the comments that you've sent in, they're always read. Our news team follow up some of the leads. And I'm going to leave you with this fantastic one that came in at the end of the show yesterday. Alex, any chance of having an open day in the secret establishment where the DOI think up and play out all these crazy schemes? I've got visions of a James Bond Q-style laboratory where dummies are fighting cars around roundels, and whilst regular breaking it all to a standstill, ministers walk around head-scratching, blaming previous ministers, while civil servants disappear down flumes with gilt-edged pensions. Please, can we have a visit there? It would be great, and it would give the kids somewhere to go, Mr. Cannon. Please, please, please. Thank you very much for that tongue-in-cheek message. Keep my fingers crossed that Andy is back tomorrow. Thank you very much to the studio producer, Barry Redfern, for holding my hand for the last couple of days. Christy De Haven is up next, 1 to 3 with Christy D. Have a lovely Wednesday afternoon. I'm hoping to be back at 3 tomorrow, not midday. Ta-da.